KJ Show, WEEI, 617-779-7937. As a few weeks back, Mike Vrabel talking about the receiving room for the Patriots, which is the big story, right? I think if they're two big stories, like if three big stories, because everything's in threes. I think number one is the receiving room. Number two is the running back room. And number two is Drake May's room, because there's nobody in the room with him, right? Now the other side of that is, if there's disaster in the quarterback room, like injury, there's disaster for this entire team. Like, you can tell me all you want about, like, you know, Josh Dobbs is capable. The team be in trouble if Drake May has to be out one or two games this season. But the receiver room is the story, because there's been nobody in it. Stephon Diggs is now the proverbial leader in it. And boy, what a preseason he's had before the preseason. So, one, to say a name like Stephon Diggs in the receiving room is probably the biggest name you've heard in the room probably since you said Edelman's name again in the room. Right? There's just not been a receiver worth scaring defenses on this team in several years, at least for all the years of Mac Jones being here, for sure. Tyquan Thornton didn't work out. Kendrick Bourne was supposed to be, he seemed to be working out at one point. Injuries kind of caught up with him. Now it's just been kind of like everybody's like, this, you know, who wants to be a sixth rounder and make the Patriots? That's what's been kind of going on. But I went to ESPN and looked at what is the presumed depth chart right now for the receiving room, and I was kind of shocked at what I saw. So here's your receiver one. Obviously, it's Stephon Diggs. They list him as questionable. I'm thinking, life is a bit questionable these days, right, Cardi B? Sickness? I'm kidding. DeMario Douglas as the two, and Kyle Williams as the three. Does that surprise you, Jacob, right there?
Yeah, what about the two wide receivers they drafted last season? It looks like they didn't pan out, huh?
Oh, well, see, this is where it gets interesting. So the backup immediately to Stephon Diggs is Mac Hollins, which is interesting because I thought maybe you put Mac Hollins on the other side and DeMario Douglas would be the three, but they have Mac Hollins as the backup one. Kayshon Boutte is the backup two. Kendrick Bourne is the immediate backup three. So now we're getting to the third level of the depth chart, and as Jacob alluded, there's a couple of names you haven't even heard just yet. Jalen Polk is the third string backup one. Javon Baker, the backup two, and Chisholm the third, who a lot of people made a lot of ravings about, is the backup. He's the third depth chart third backup receiver for the three receiver. Polk and Baker have to look at and see, damn, y'all saw what happened to Tyquan, right? Tyquan gone. And they gave him every opportunity. How many times did we have the conversation? When he gets healthy and more weight on him, he can stretch the field, his speed, that people talk about like he had some of the fastest times when he's at Baylor. I don't know if he's had the fastest time at Chick-fil-A. I don't know at this point. I don't know. But I do know that Polk and Baker sitting on the third rung of their depth charts tells me either one of them are gone or both of them are gone before you get to the start of the season. This is probably why you bring in someone like a Vrabel. And people call me a Gerard Mayo homer for some reasons that are really tied to skin color and what you filled out in boxes. But what I'm here to say is this. If Gerard Mayo was here still, Polk and Baker, I don't think, would feel like they're under this type of threat of losing their job. I just really don't think they are. I think it would be like, well, coach is learning, they're learning. I think Vrabel's like, you guys are borderline not NFL players. And of course, if Polk is not kept, Lad McConkey, yes, you will hear Lad McConkey's
guy.
Well, yeah, of course. What, slow in a lot of jokes? No, I'm kidding. Oh, I'm so sorry. I was not called for. But yeah. You would then hear, wow, Jalen Polk walked out so well that Lad McConkey was passed over And then all the eyes will turn right at who? Elliott Wolf. If Polk does not work out and the receiving room is a meh, I think one of the biggest questions is going to be like, hey, Elliott, you traded away the right to Ladd McConkey, and now really you only have Stephon Diggs. Maybe Douglas is popped. Maybe, no pun intended, and Kyle Williams flashes, right? Kendrick Bourne, you almost feel like teams might call about him. This is why I think, you know, with the excitement for Chisholm, it's like, hey, if he's the backup number three, he's the second line depth player, you'd be like, okay, great. But the problem is, well, why wouldn't it be Baker or Polk? Those guys are not going to be around. Kayshon Boutte, I think, is going to be the secret out of all this. When I look at this, you say, all right, there are people like Dan Ball talked about it last week, concerned about the injuries with Stephon Diggs, right? We forget that Stephon Diggs is coming off of an injury last year that only had him play, I think, seven games. What if he goes down? Now Mac Hollins is your one. Douglas is your two. Kyle Williams is your three. And I would ask you, ladies and gentlemen, who does that scare? Nobody. Because Mac Hollins is really trying to find his way into being a... I seriously thought he was coming here to be the number two receiver, right? I thought week one, who lines up at wide receiver one, two? I would think it would be Diggs at the one, Hollins at the two, Boutte or Douglas would be the three. But they see Douglas and Boutte as the two, and probably because they work with Drake May. But it's almost kind of like this whole... I think they end up probably have to get another receiver that probably gets released that's of better quality. If you're going to provide for Drake May, and the schedule's not going to get any easier than it is now, right? Because this is a team that at one point I thought would win 11 games, but now what Pittsburgh is doing, I take that down a bit. And then I wonder about that Atlanta game. Will Michael Penix Jr. really be able to step into it? Because he really flashed in those last two games when he just got thrown in there. He showed himself to be something. So if the worst thing that can happen to the Patriots is win 9 games, because the following season you're probably going to have one of the tougher schedules in the league. Because the league, they look at these things. Like, you play bad, we want you to get kind of good. This is where the Patriots are right now. Their schedule is not really challenging at all. When you've got Cleveland on there, you've got the Panthers in there. Gosh, I don't have the schedule in front of me. The Giants, you know, that's not something that makes you lose sleep over. So you're not going to have this easy of a schedule if you perform well this year. But if you perform poorly this year, which I think Vegas is kind of like, hey, this is a team that may win 9 games, but a team that can win 9 games could also lose 9 games. It's a thin line. What are the Jets, right? Someone in the AFC East is going to be a surprise between the Patriots, the Dolphins, and the Jets. Somebody's going to be a surprise. Now, I think the Patriots are a fair enough surprise. We know what Buffalo is going to be. Maybe the Dolphins aren't as good. That sounds crazy. I think the Dolphins have lost something when they gave up Jonnu Smith. Does that sound crazy coming out of my mouth, Jacob?
I think the Dolphins have a chance to be surprisingly bad.
Yes, and all because of their move of getting rid of Jonnu Smith to the Steelers, which I think make the Steelers even more dangerous. 2 weeks ago, even when Aaron Rodgers first got to the Steelers, I said, you know what? Steelers versus Patriots, I think it's the third week of the season. I don't know if the Steelers would have found their groove just yet, because I think it's going to take Aaron Rodgers a little bit of time to warm up. But then when they made that trade for Jonnu Smith and they were able to keep T.J. Watt, I'm like, they going to be tough. And keep in mind, I think, with Pittsburgh, that their game against the Patriots may determine whether Mike Tomlin has a winning season or not. Like, that is their pivot game, right? Because is game three, is it momentum to say put them at 3-0 potentially at that point? Or if they lose that game, or, you know, anything happens to Rodgers during the season, I think that's the other part of it. You know, Tomlin's playing for his job. So they say that, you know, the worst dog is the dog that's cornered. That's Pittsburgh. And maybe the Miami series, which I said would be a split because, you know, one is in the sun and the other one is in December. Maybe they win that game in the sun just because Tua doesn't have his security blanket in Jonnu Smith. It became his security blanket. So the Patriots, they have to be a 10-win team, and this receiving room has to cull off the worst pieces that are there. Polk and Baker, I mean, to be third string at this point tells me they could be the early cuts. And then if they're the early cuts, I can't wait for the first person that turns to Elliot Wolf and say, so was that worth not taking Ladd McConkey, where now you would be saying Diggs 1, McConkey 2. That could be the receiving room right now. And if that's the receiving room right now, not only is this the Patriots are a playoff team, but I would say this is a team that probably wins its wild card, and depending on who its matchup is the next week, potentially could win that second week. That is not my conversation right now with this wide receiver room. 617-779-7937. Text line, that's the same number as well. All right, still to come, we've got With Anna or In the Harbor. But right now it's time to trend with Jacob Lassner. KJ Show, WEEI, good Sunday to you. 617-779-7937. Alex Cora after yesterday's another blowout by the Red Sox. We'll get to that shortly. Let's get to your text messages. Jacob, what you got?
All right, I've got, they need to re-sign some of these pitchers that are on the last year of their deal. We always just seem to let them go. We don't trade them or sign them.
Yeah, it makes you think of like the situation with Nathan Eovaldi, who wanted to stay. And you were like, okay, if Nathan Eovaldi was here, what would the team be? Would there have been more stability with this pitching staff? Yes. I here's the thing about getting another arm. It's almost kind of like Hauk is recovering, right? So let's take him out of the equation, even though he's supposed to be an important point of the equation. Do you let Bayo, do you say, okay, Bayo isn't enough, so we need to go get something better just for him to become something great going somewhere else? So I think where you are with starting pitching, you're okay. It's just that sometimes with when Walker Buehler's out there, you're like, I don't know. Giolito's performed better than you thought. Crochet's a horse. Middle relief, I think they always stand to take. But that's been the story for the last few years, is the middle relief. But I would then probably say that at some point this middle relief was overworked. And who has all-star middle relief? Middle relief is the hardest thing to find right after starting pitching, right? Because if you've got great starting pitching, you don't have to depend on your middle relief as much, right? Your middle relief is just kind of like, hey, give me an inning, maybe five or six at bats, that, and you're done, and then we get to the closer. And then Chapman has been much better than anybody expected when acquired.
I got one more text. Hey, KJ and Jacob, it's put up or shut up time for Red Sox ownership. The season is very much in play. They need to be buyers at the trade deadline. No more lip service.
Yeah, it's frustrating because this is the youngest, most unaccomplished team, putting the team in a situation to make a run. Like, in the past, you know, you've had a star or a couple of stars on the team, and the team has been bad. Or, you know, sometimes you would have Story out for a big portion of the season, and that would be the conversation. Story's hot right now. I mean, the hottest I've ever seen him on this team, and this is kind of the perfect time to do it. If you needed a reset in the clubhouse by getting rid of Devers and you find yourself at 500 some 10, 15 games later, you would almost have to say, okay, it worked out. It's kind of worked out for the team. Because if this team was several games under 500, then you would say, oh, man, you get rid of Devers right after you're on a high. The team has been on a consistent low ever since. I think Devers ultimately is going to work out for what San Francisco needs, though that park is so not conducive to what he does, and that's where the struggles are really going to exist. You know, like, Devers is going to do his best work in Oracle, hitting home runs over the left field wall. That's his, everything else is going to be a deep fly ball. Like, he's not, unless he gets it whole dead center, but when do you ever really get it dead center locked in? But as you heard what Cora just said, good pitching, defense, base running is what's going to win games for you. Now, if they can cull some of those mistakes, you know, then, yeah, you know, like what you saw in that, in the Reds game does not feel like what you're seeing now with this team in this DC series, right? Remember those who were saying, oh, move Rafaela to second base. Did you see the catch he made out in center field? Because they've got a little bit of a deep center out there, yes. Did you see the catch he made in center that it was almost like a nothing? 95% of other center fielders in the league, that goes over their head. He does it with ease. You have a center fielder. Second base, those are things you're still working out, but you're like, hey, if Mayer can continue to, if he can be a stopgap for right now, then that's fine. I still think that ultimately he's your shortstop. Campbell should be your second baseman once he comes back up, not your first. Because if you're going to go get a first baseman in at the trade deadline, which you need to go get that can hit, you would want to keep him going into next year, because you're going to say, so it's going to be Campbell or Cassis at first next year? No, I think you'll be spinning your wheels again. Bregman at third. I think if Story has a good, finishes out the year strong, you listen to people who want to buy and you sell. All right, 617-779-7937. Let's go to JP. JP, thanks so much for calling the KJ Show. Good Sunday to you.
KJ, real quick, LB, rest in peace.
Yeah.
LB, Bork, Neely, Miller, some tough-ass Bruins teams, telling you. And they're kind of getting gritty like that. So
yeah, I'll give my personal story with LB. We worked together for about 2-3 years. Together, right. Towards the end of the show. So, yeah, so feeling a kind of a way about a good guy. But go ahead, JP.
Absolutely. So, KJ, you are the Dr. Phil of this station. I'll tell you why. A month ago, you know what happened. Sunday night, we're screaming bleep. The Canadians bleep. Yankees, we're in. Last week, I'm off the Tobin Bridge ready to jump. I can't believe it. Now I'm Pacino and Godfather 3. They're pulling me back in. Can they hit 84 wins this year so I can get my prop bet?
Yeah. Will they hit 84 wins? I think so. Yeah, I think, you're talking about a team that's 3 games better than last year. And so with 72 games left, you're talking about, could this team win 40 games, yeah, somewhere in there? I think they could win 40 out of 72. That's 8 games above 500. Again, if they have the pitching going, they've got the base running going. Like I said, as we talk about, and JP, thanks for the call. I'll let you go so you can hear the rest. You know, when we talk about some of the struggles that Duran has been going through, it was kind of interesting when you're like, hey, what happens when you put him, now granted it was a left-handed pitcher yesterday, but what if you don't have the stress of him being at the top of the order? Is there some freedom that he has there that he doesn't feel like he's got to set the table and therefore be full of angst? Now, I don't, you know, obviously he's the speed guy. You want to put a speed guy on first, obviously, as well. But when he doesn't seem to have that pressure on him, because I think he's still trying to figure out his way and how does he operate now, not having, you know, Devers behind him in the two spot. When Bregman comes back, I think you got to put Bregman in the two spot. And if that's the case, then I think you will see the improved Duran, who, when he gets around those bases, there's nothing prettier in baseball than a triple. To me, the triple is the hardest, obviously the hardest thing to achieve. Ask Sedane Rafael yesterday, tripping going to third. I mean, he had a clear triple too. That's the other thing. But calling me the Dr. Phil of WEEI, I tend to agree and pay my ass, pay me. You know, so. But the other part of it is Dr. Phil just did file for bankruptcy, so maybe not the best, but thank you so much for the comments. I really do appreciate. Yeah, to the texter who said, look, the put up or shut up is more right than ever before, right? Go back to a few years ago when they won 92 games and they got to the hot start and everyone's like, please send pitching. These guys are leaking oil. And management didn't provide the pitching. They provided Schwarber. That was a feel-good for a little bit. They made it to, you know, they were two games away from making it to the World Series. Super overachieving, but it's been downhill ever since. Okay, the fans are still with you through 78 wins, 81 wins with you doing no spending. Chaim Bloom was he was the rabbit in the comparison of, you know, does a bear use toilet tissue? Like, that's why you see him in toilet, because if it doesn't, hey, rabbit. Chaim Bloom took the hits. No more Chaim Bloom. Better pitching staff. You get rid of your marquee player in a high gamble move, but the player helped himself with that. Raffy wanted out of here. And truth be told, if Raffy doesn't probably take more pride in the honor of being a Major League Baseball player, because you can come from a place where, man, on the street you grew up with, five guys played in Major League Baseball. You can start to think like, well, playing in Major League Baseball is no big deal. You ask the parents who are shelling out thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars just for three bats. Like, the cost of bats here alone in America makes me like, go play something. Go play football, man. I got my cleats and pads. So what if a concussion? I'm not paying thousands of dollars just for you to have a bat.
Better than hockey.
Oh, my gosh. Right, but even, I don't want to get off a tangent, but even with hockey, my whole thing is like, if you can't get ice in your backyard at all during the year, why even bother with hockey? Here, yeah, right? Your kid way up in Maine, this is what you should be like. Why do you even have a basketball in your hand? There's all that ice out there, son. It's going to be there through mid-May. But, yeah, the way this team is constructed right now, management's goals and desires should have already been met. You've trimmed the payroll. You said you're in the Juan Soto sweepstakes. I say, where's the money that's accounted for? Like I'm like my own little personal CBO, right? Is okay, if you were one of the last three teams in the mix for Juan Soto, were you willing to give up $600 million? And if you were, how has that been spent? We're not saying spend all the $600 million if that's what you were going to spend and lose to get Juan Soto. But if it only could be accounted for somewhere in the 170s, just under 200, I'd just say, where's another 100 more? So now's the time to say, we're going to build the team for this run, for this year, and this is going to be the face we're going to roll out next year with small added pieces. Though I would say probably the things that you would have to do is the small added pieces is probably, look, love Connor Wong. He's from Pearland, Texas. Pearland, Texas is one of the most dear places to me in my heart. But damn, bro, no, you're not working out. It's not working out, Connor. It's not. You probably address the backup catcher situation. Obviously, you're going to do more about the middle relief. You may pay to go get a setup reliever or a closer. Keep Chapman to play that other role that you don't get the person for. And then you've got a team that can rock. I said, if you know Crochet is your one, maybe Buehler doesn't stay, but that frees up money for you to go get another pitcher. So Buehler is one of those situations where you're like, if it gets better, you stay. If it doesn't get better, well, that's the great thing. Nobody's paid for you to stay here, so you'll be gone. You've got now a leader in the clubhouse who players are clearly taking to in Bregman. I don't know if I'm going to love the number that may come out when in these negotiations, because if it's 40 now, I think that's what's crazy now you think about it. Yeah, 35 was too much for Mookie, but maybe 45 is enough to keep Bregman. So these are interesting things that are going to play out, but absolutely, management has to start being in the position of putting up because the fans have done a pretty good job of shutting up by still supporting a team that's been 500 or worse three straight years and is 500 right now. But I think the other part that I don't think the fan base wants to see long term either is, why can't this group of guys be the ones that stay no matter what money they ask for? Like, can you keep the kids that you've grown yourself? These are practically all these guys out there came through the system. How come they cannot be celebrated as one unified unit? Especially if you're now, some of them are going to go because there's going to be more money to be had somewhere else. But get into the competition of arguing to say that you want to make them, you know, that you want them to stay. You know, when Xander left, you're like, okay, some could see it. You know, when he went into free agency, it's just like, okay, if someone's going to give him more money than he deserves, then I don't know if the Red Sox should take the fall or the hit for that. And if you look what Xander's doing now, oh my goodness, probably the price of beer is going up $5 in San Diego just to make up for the costs of Xander's contract. But in the situation with Mookie, that's always going to be a discussion because Mookie's not only has he continued to excel, but he's the reason why the Dodgers are built up the way they are. Freeman comes because of Mookie. They get Ohtani because of Mookie. Probably because Ohtani's the interpreter. He can't leave California with my bets, I'm just saying. So Mookie has turned himself to be the ultimate team builder for the ultimate team that's willing to spend the ultimate dollar, both here and in the Far East. Mookie probably could have been doing some of that for the Red Sox, but this is where we are. This is the bed we lie in. And I don't think the fan base is going to take it very well or well at all if nothing is done at the trade deadline, especially if you know where you need to put that person. You're not saying, hey, Mayer's not ready or Roman Anthony's not ready. Like, I think Cora, and this is smart on Cora, go ahead and start playing those guys against lefties, because when you do that, you're telling management, these are the guys I plan to go with every day. And because of that, they're cost effective. And now it says, okay, that's one less hole you have to go fill. I mean, there's only 20 second basemen in the Hall of Fame. So there's no plethora of second basemen to go get to shore up things. So where this team sits at right now in terms of their roster is ideal to really just go get one more bat and that's it. All right, 617-779-7937. All right, in about 10 minutes, I've got to tell my favorite LB story from when we worked together. Just passed away. It's shocking news. Part of the Greg Hill Show for 20-something years on AAF. And when I first came to the company, I worked with LB as well as doing a morning show in the same hallway. And I've got to tell my favorite LB story, kid, about LB and I in an elevator at about 5:10 in the morning. That's coming in about 10 minutes. But we're celebrating the July 4th weekend. That's a gunshot. You just leave the fireworks alone. This is a firework. So just knowing the difference of what's going on in the neighborhood. But let's take it back to the colonial days. And at the same time, let's bring some of these previous Boston sports figures and wonder, are these guys capable for fighting for the revolution, or do we throw them into the harbor? Hit it, Jacob. Did I not send you the music for this?
I got it. Give me one second.
Oh, there it is, because I'm thinking, like, I am such a bad leader. So here's how it works. If they're quality enough to have been in the army,
sir!
And if they suck, we're throwing him into the harbor. All right, ready?
From now on, you will speak only when spoken to.
Simple thank you would have been nice for a teammate who lays down a sacrifice.
Sound off like you got a pair.
Sir, yes, sir!
You will not laugh. You will not cry. Now get up. Get on your feet.
All right, Jacob has a list, and I will either throw them in the harbor or salute them with honor.
Manny Ramirez.
Now, here's what's crazy. My first time here working in Boston, Manny Ramirez was like the first big acquisition. Carl Everett was next to him as well. So there's a part of me that says, gosh, I would always re-enlist Manny. But have you heard Manny talk? Like, what Manny started saying about Devers, saying, you know, you're paying me $300 million. You need to come talk to me. I love you, but Manny, I got to throw you in the harbor for that. We put up with a lot with you and your mess and everything, and now you're going to talk. Next.
Joe Judge.
Oh, my God. Can I throw this guy in there a couple of times? Get on your damn water. You thought you were Harry Hardass, and then suddenly, I can help run offense. You probably ruined Mac Jones a little bit in terms of how you came off, soldier. You know, just because you coach with the Patriots doesn't mean that you need to think that you're, you know, Pat Patriot. Next.
Craig Breslow.
Ooh, soldier. You know what? At this point, I know that may not sound like you're like, are you kidding? But pitching is here. Look, you the bold move of getting rid of Devers, it doesn't seem like that's worked out bad. Sometimes you have to make the tough decisions as a soldier. And for now, I'm going to say that he's in the Army. But, you know, hey, next year is the 250-year anniversary. And let me tell you, it can change very quickly. Next.
Jonnu Smith.
Here? With the Patriots? Oh my gosh. I still see the Saints tip ball at the start of the second half, where he tips it because the ball's a little behind him. That's Mac Jones, but in other words, don't tip the ball when it's behind you. Take it in for a pick six. And what makes it worse is now you're literally all pro caliber. You've just been traded for. You're going to Pittsburgh. So let's see how much of a soldier you really are when you come in with Pittsburgh. But God, no. Jonnu Smith? Jonnu, I think in Spanish means not able to swim. Next.
Mac Jones.
Oh, my God. Jesus Christ. All those just... I mean, dude nearly had a Michael Jackson voice. Where's your manhood, sir? Now drop and give me, I don't know, arm strength? Next.
Kendrick Perkins.
Oh, I know. Now, KJ, if you say about Manny Ramirez, you got to apply it to Kendrick Perkins. But you know what? I'm a stand-on business. You got to have one kind of clown prince inside the service, and that's what Kendrick Perkins really is. And at the end of the day, when it comes to the national narrative, he does still have love for both the Celtics. Is that how you say it? I had to do that English, though. Jesus Christ. Thanks, English. That's one thing you could have held on from the British. Next.
Danny Amendola.
Oh, what a damn whiner. Oh, Belichick. I didn't like him. He didn't like me. You know, Amendola, I think, has a bit of a jealousy complex of all the stories that are told. And he's like, but do you remember me? Do you remember what I did to help us get to the Super Bowl? I do, but damn. You have to be a little whiny girl about it. Ugh. Next.
Next up, Gordon Hayward.
Oh, bro, with honor.
Yes, sir! Yes, sir!
You went down and crushed your leg on national television. Now, I didn't think you were all that they were paying you to be, and it did kind of affect Jaylen Brown a little bit. But you going down with that injury, let's just call it what it is, allowed Jaylen Brown to wake back up and win this time, another title.
Yes,
that's Gordon Hayward, overpaid, but you did your duty, soldier. Now, take your benefits. Next.
Kyrie Irving.
Why do I even have to say anything nice about the guy? Next.
Brad Marchand.
Here's why. Oh, in January, it's us, it's us. We're fighting together, it's us, it's us, it's us. And then you go and win a cup with them. The same thems that were an 8 seed and you allowed to wake up. The same them that you got nothing going against them the previous year.
Go pound
and
sand.
Now.
Go pound sand.
Oh, what a Benedict Arnold. What do they say? Sometimes you can't always trust Canadians. Next.
Mike Napoli.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yes, sir!
Bro, take your shirt off. Run through the North End if you need to, like your Paul Revere, brother. You will always be a legend here, and anytime you come back, brother, someone's got a beer for you.
Yes,
next.
Curt Schilling.
Now, this is controversial, but think about what you have to do in war and not what they say after war. This guy bled for a championship. Now, when it comes to the video game stuff, sorry, didn't mean to say that. But look, despite what you think of Curt Schilling and his thoughts and his words, he is a hero of the Boston Revolution when it comes to sports. Let's do three more.
Mookie Betts.
Can you salute him again? Can you show the importance of what did this guy's like the Cole and Powell that you got rid of? Did you win a championship with Mookie? Has he won championship since he's left? Oh, boy, it's tough. Next.
Rafael Devers.
You know, the way you handled spring training and you didn't, like, if you're going to be the DH, then why not get in there and DH the spring training? I like Rafi. I just don't like how he handled everything. How it turns out for him, it probably turns out okay. But what he did, not okay. Final one.
All right, last one. Alex Cora.
Alex Cora. Now, here's why. I know some people are like, nah, he's dead. He's good. Look, one of the best baseball managers in the game. Look, what he did in Houston, sometimes you have to have the intel to serve well, right, soldier? Whether it's Apple Watches or garbage cans, it doesn't matter to me. If he can get another World Series title with this team in the next couple of years, he would have defied the pretty much management not giving him guns or weapons or even a helicopter. And that is with honor or throw in the harbor to salute our own Bostonia here on WEEI. The KJ Show continues next with a bout of scurry. Thank you so much for hanging out with the KJ Show here on WEEI. Remember, you can play back any of the show on the Audacy app, AUDACY. Also, by chance, if you have the iHeart app, you can hear the show in real time. No rewinding, but you can hear WEEI in real time. I'm going to get to a couple of texts here before I get out of here. Dan Ball's coming up at 10, and he's also got the pregame show for the Sox going for the sweep against the Nationals. And then in a couple of minutes, I got to share my Lyndon Byers story, who passed away here over the weekend. And LB, I'm still trying to kind of process it. All right, 617-779-7937. What you got, Jacob?
Meyer doesn't have to play versus lefties. As they grind to the playoffs, they got 10 runs yesterday with him on the bench, and Romy had 3 hits.
Yeah, but at some point, if he's going to be your, if you're going to move him to second, you're not going to start taking him off of games for second. Again, yeah, at some point he's going to have to face lefties, right? Because if you're saying, okay, so he's going to be a platoon guy for the right, I think you kind of have to play this the way that Cora is playing it. So if you're going to stick Meyer in there against lefties from time to time, that's not the worst of it. Anthony has shown to do a little bit better. Like, I'm really impressed the way that he's realizing that he doesn't have to be the big bopper that he was down there. Like, where are the 497 home runs? How about, like thank you for the base hit and driving in the run, right? Like, the guy runs across the plate, the same plate, whether you hit it out the park or whether you knock in a run, you know, to left. So that's where the impression is like, especially Anthony, who is now playing against lefties, is showing a calmness at the plate. And I think ultimately, and I said this about Cassis as well, that these guys aren't home run hitters. They're going to be better players if you allow them to spray the ball. And then occasionally, 22 times of the year, you get hold, 25 times you get hold of one deep. That's going to happen. That's fine. A couple more texts.
All right, we've got a long one here. Campbell hasn't proven anything. A year or two more in the minors is maybe needed, regardless of the contract. Why the hate of Story? You're moving on from Gold Glove, speed, 14 of 14 stolen bases, 20-plus home runs. Why? For unproven rookies who may not work at shortstop because of Story's contract?
Well, because Story, you're almost wondering, when does the egg breaker get in the Humpty Dumpty story? Like, that's because of the injury, right? Because one who's prone to injury is prone to another injury. So, like, while you're having this and the cost of the contract – you almost have to say, hey, while it gets good is when you might have to make your move. You know, if you don't think that Meyer is not the shortstop of the future of this team and you think that Trevor Story is the future, no. I think you're hoping, like, at this point, hey, let him get really good and hot, and let's see if we can get some things, pieces that we know will work for us down the road. Yeah, like I said, the great thing about Story is you're getting great defense. He's hot right now, but we're not talking about a body of work over 4 years of this. All right, one more text, and if not, I'll get to my salute to LB.
We've got somebody talking about Tanner Houck saying he is the wild card of the rotation.
I agree, because he's not out, because the great thing is he's not out on the field failing, and therefore he doesn't have the pressures that he did last. Keep in mind, last year Houck was the one starter, was your A1 starter last year. When he comes back, he doesn't have that pressure of being the number one. He may not even have the pressure of being the number two if Giolito keeps going the way he's going, right? Because remember, Giolito was supposed to kind of be that guy last year, maybe the veteran guy. If Giolito can continue to provide great outings, there's your two, taking pressure off of Bueller.
Bayo could be the three.
Bayo the three, and Houck come back in as the four, or move himself into the four. And now you say, hey, if you've got Bueller still on the outside, you know, you still have Crawford. So you have things in place that don't have the staff looking as bad as some people think it is. Only because the young guys who you're so dependent on now get to kind of take a back seat, and all of it is really because of what Crochet is providing out there. All right, before I get out of here, the total shock. You can actually kill the music for this out of this, because I don't know if I even want to say this over music on the way out of here. The passing of Lyndon Byers, LB to so many of us, is a total, it's just crushing. Fans totally understand the crushing of it because of the years with him with the Bruins and so forth, and even the years you heard him on the air at AAF on the Greg Hill Show, and I'm sure Greg Hill Show will have plenty to discuss tomorrow. But being able to work in the building with the guy, like, this guy had a sixth sense to just be able to look at you and know if something wasn't okay with you, put his arm around you. You good, kid? And then he could kind of break you down without asking, and you tell him what's going on. And so, though he's not putting his arm around, I'm in an elevator with him. I'm doing mornings, and we're like in a small closet, and there are things that are going on my morning show that kind of the building know about. And he's just like, hey, you got good energy, kid. Hang in there. And I'm thinking, like, LB, I could probably tell you exactly what you were drinking and how much you drank in this elevator. But he's just like, it's Friday, man. So this is the celebration. And so for being the lovable goon that he was as a Bruin, this is a guy that has a few of us in tears that he's gone, because one of the better spirits in this material world is no longer here. So salute, LB. My best to his family and my deepest regards. It's just a big blow for all of us here who are part of this family back over on 20 Guest Street, and wasn't with us here over on Birmingham Parkway, but over on Guest Street, just the life of the floor. Right. So salute. And, you know, I just remember, man, there are good people in this world that have come across you in your life, and you just hate to see them go before it's time for them to go. So with that, I say, have a great Sunday. Rest in peace, LB, man. We've already missed you when you weren't here, but now you're really not here. And that's tough for a lot of us. All right. Dan Ball next. Have a great Sunday.